The conference is now being recorded. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to the locking of a domain name subject to UTRP proceedings working group call on Thursday, 17th January. On the call today we have Hago Dafala, Christine Durain, Lisa Garono, Alan Greenberg, Volker Grayman, Celia Lerman, David Maher, Michaeli Nealon, Juan Manuel Rojas, Matt Schneller, Faisal Shah. We have apologies from Gabriela Slack. And from staff, we have Marika Connings, Barry Cobb, and myself, Julia Chavolet. May I remind all participants to please state their names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, or good morning, or I don't know, I'm running out of time, times of the day. Everybody, and welcome to the super duper UDRP locking working group. Yay! So exciting. Okay, I've obviously had plenty of coffee. As per usual, I have to ask you, does anybody have any significant changes or substantive changes to their statements of interest or their conflict of interest? Going once, going twice. Nope. Okay, fine. Moving on. Now we are we've got a couple of things on the agenda today. Because I like doing things back to front and upside down, I'm going to deal with the item number 3 on the agenda before we move to item number 2. Because last week, I've just been informed we don't do conflicts of interest anymore. Oh, for God's sake! I never got that memo. Grr, never mind. But anyway, if there was a conflict of interest, you'd have told me. The third item on the agenda, is with regards to the next meeting. I know that several of us will be attending the regional meeting in Amsterdam next week, and others who may not be attending in person will probably be attending remotely. Marika, did we have any slots open at other times of the week when we could try to reschedule this call, or did we give up? I can't remember where we left that.
This is Marika. We actually didn't send out a doodle or anything, so you know we could send out something today, but I think it would be probably rather late, as presumably people coming from further away will have already, will start traveling either Tuesday or Wednesday. So it would be basically Monday, which might be too short notice for.
Thank you.
For most.
Okay. Well, in the interest of transparency and giving people the possibility to do things, if we could just do a doodle to see if anybody's available for a call on Monday. And if not, I would respectfully request that we skip next week's meeting, since I know that none of the registrars will be around, and I suspect none of the registry types will be around, and I'm not too sure about any of the other people based in Europe what they're doing. And I'm sure Alan could do with a day off.
Yay.
But you might say that. So if we can try for Monday, or does anybody have any thoughts now that they would like to share? I will throw it open. I'm all about throwing things open. Good God, I've got to stop drinking this coffee. It's really good. No? No takers?
I'll make a comment. I think we should just cancel at this point. We should have done it earlier. We didn't. Let's accept it and just move on.
Okay, thank you,
Alan. We're making good progress.
Okay, thank you, Alan. Does anybody disagree with Alan? Bearing in mind, he may be small and Canadian and polite, but he is a fiery little man. Working on the basis, as usual, that total silence means ascension, then I will second Alan and say that we cancel the meeting. So, Marika, please note that we have decided to cancel the meeting next week.
I've noted that. The next meeting would be the 31st of January, for the record.
Okay, thank you, Marika. Woohoo! We're making progress. We've actually decided that we're not doing any work next week. We're so good at this. Okay, then. Now, last week, we were discussing the straw man proposal. Luke had given us some input. Volker provided some input. There was some discussion on this, and Marika has put up their. I don't know. Is it just me? Do the rest of you? Are the rest of you seeing kind of truncated things with those pages, or am I losing my mind?
What do
yeah,
you
this is Marika. It's basically the setup of Adobe Connect. It's not possible to make the screens or the documents fit the complete screens. It automatically adjusts. So what you can do, I've already removed one of the pots, so it's the screen and the both pods are a bit bigger, but you can enhance the size by just going to the percentage at the bottom or doing full screen.
Oh, okay.
Or if people prefer only to see one document, I can also get rid of the other one, as you prefer.
Okay, thanks, Marika. Sorry, this is me being rather stupid, and it's just, well, I'll just leave it as me being rather stupid, and I won't say anything further. Okay, then, so Volker, Luke, and Marika, some notes there, and there's also some input from ICANN Compliance. Thank you for breaking that out, Marika. This makes things significantly easier for us. And then there's some other stuff from David Roach Turner. Okay, then. Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. Just to clarify, on the left-hand side in the straw man, there are also still some comments that Luke initially made. I've taken out the ones that we discussed at the last meeting. So there's a bit of a mixed, we need to look at the two things. So I don't know if people first want to go to the comments that are on the right side or first finish off with Luke's comments, which, again, may relate to some of the other comments that are in here as well. I think on the point of the information provided by compliance and the subsequent suggestion from David, I think that has already been incorporated in the strawman as is. But, of course, people are free to comment on that as well. That relates to the definition of pending.
The definition of, this pendency thing, which confused the hell out of me because I don't speak fluent lawyer. Okay. Be thankful I don't speak fluent lawyer. Imagine me with a law degree. That's just scary. Okay, does anybody have any other input or any other thoughts? I see that Christine has sent us a barrage of emails to the list in the last couple of minutes. One thing which I note, which I just would read into the record here, even though it is going to be on the mailing list, is its relation to who is. Okay, well, the only part I wanted to continue discussion on was the part about registrars who may have stricter who is accuracy policies than is required, in inverted commas. We do see some number of registrars who spontaneously delete domain names when they get a UDRP notice for either inaccurate who is or for violating their internal trademark policies. It would make the provider's job much easier to disallow both, but I suspect registrars will not appreciate this, possibly viewing the recommendation as usurping their authority. That's from Christine. Does anybody have any reflections, any reaction to that? Don't all rush at once. Alan.
Yeah, a question. Is Christine on the call? No. Yes.
Yeah, Alan, I'm here.
Yeah. What do you mean by usurping their authority?
This is Christine.
I would have assumed, I mean, we're talking about, pendency, that as soon as there's a notification from the provider that you can no longer take action on a domain name and deleting it is a rather strong action.
This is Christine. Yeah, and I would agree with you on that. I had read through Matt's comment, and I was just thanking him for putting all that out there. But he had mentioned in the section at the end where it says how the lock fits with other WHOIS policies, and Matt, I think Matt's on the call too, and maybe can jump in if I misread his email. But it seems to me that he's saying, respect to how the lock fits, of the, there's some registrar discretion as far as, you know, let's say there wasn't a UDRP and somehow the registrar became notified that there was a trademark violation or who is inaccuracy. Some registrars have a pretty strict policy of just point blank deleting that domain name or changing the who is or doing something to that domain name. And I guess the point I'm trying to make is, according to the email that or the stuff that Matt wrote, it seems like the registrar has a pretty broad discretion to do that currently. So if our recommendation says, nope, it shall be locked, it doesn't matter if it violates your internal policies or any agreement that the registrant may have signed with you, you may not delete it, you may not change the who is information, it's just, you know, you're stuck with it through the UDRP. And I think Matt now was that that was optional. So the registrar may have a very strict policy, but we can't, but they can't reinforce it if we say the UDRP needs to be different. You know, to implement the UDRP, it has to be different. But I'm just merely pointing out for the purposes of the public comment that perhaps we could expect a lot of pushback on this point from registrars who say, well, wait a second, my policy is so much stricter than even what you were requesting. Why can't I continue to do that? That's the only thing I was trying to say is that we may see some of that, and that may be fine.
Unless we want to be explicit in our recommendations that will say what the precedent is. So, you know, they could take the domain away from the current registrant and have it go to a page saying this domain may be subject to a trademark, you know, violation, but that doesn't but they can't make it disappear. So we may want to make a recommendation like that. Not sure I understand it well enough to say I do or not, but it sounds like the kind of thing we want to discuss.
Okay, thanks, Alan. Alan, I'm ceding the chair to you temporarily and putting on my hat as a registrar, if you don't mind.
Not at all.
Registrar hat on. Woohoo! Christine's question and comment is quite interesting, especially in light of the renewed emphasis or focus on discussions are surrounding who is data accuracy, quality, etc., etc., etc. Now, the question I have doesn't actually address her comment directly, because that would be far too easy. It's more one for the rest of you, with especially ICANN staff. What is the situation? Let's just say, okay, imagine a scenario where there is a domain name that is subject to a UDRP. So let's just take it on in a particular day. The domain is subject to a UDRP. The UDRP is being processed, maybe or not. The UDRP has already hit the registrar, it's about to hit the registrar, I don't know. I mean, it's not as if in who is show you whether the damn thing's in a UDRP or not. And what happens if the who is for the domain name is blatantly and obviously, trying to look for a diplomatic word, I'll go with absolute, just junk. There, whew, came up with a polite word. With an absolute blatant junk. So the same domain name is the subject of a who is inaccuracy report to ICANN. Which one takes precedence?
I'll call on Christine. I'll put my own hand up. So, Michaela, you can take back control when you want to call on me. Christine?
So what we would do in that case, the who is accuracy sort of process tends to take longer than the UDRP process in many cases. It depends on, I guess, how fast the registrar works. But what happens is we go with whatever the who is says. The who is says Mickey Mouse, we go with Mickey Mouse.
Christine, I don't think you understand my question, with all due respect. As a registrar, and I'm sure other registrars can support this, we are coming under increasing pressure from various entities, including law enforcement, IP lobby, and that guy down the road who doesn't speak to me anymore. with respect to the level of whoisocracy and the level and the action, the level of action or inaction on the part of registrars to either deal with it in some way, in other words, have better quality whois, or to delete or suspend domain names where the quality of the whois is at best dubious. So let us say, for argument's sake, that a particular that my registrar, which for the record it isn't, attracted a very large number of registrants whose domain name choices were to lead to a very large volume of UDRP and other type of disputes. And I'm talking large volume. Then, and the whois data was absolute junk. We would then be hit with lots of, could then potentially be hit with lots of whois inaccuracy things and be lambasted by ICANN compliance over the whois accuracy issue. Now, obviously, we have to respect the UDRP. The problem is which one has greater power. It doesn't matter how long the thing takes, because let's just say that if ICANN compliance picks up the phone and rings you to say you've already had 3 breach notices with respect to whois accuracy. Not that we have, I'm just saying hypothetically. And we are about to pull your contract on you. You know, what are we meant to do? I'm just trying to understand how that would fit. Thanks. I'll shut up now.
So this is Chris, and I it looks like there's some pretty learned minds in the queue. So I'll speak at it from our perspective, and then I think there's a couple things going on. First of all is the UDRP is just going to continue. We're not waiting for whois accurate data. If you provide us with the registrant that you have in your records, and we're going to use the whois data, we're going to serve to both of those. That's what UDRP Rule 2 requires. So from there on, we're going to carry on. And I've made it pretty clear throughout the whole time we've been on this call that this is sort of why I brought it up with Matt. And that is, there is this issue, and Matt, I think, brought it up in his email as far as, this: how much is the registrar required to do? And so that's why I've been sort of sensitive to this idea that registrars do want to fix it. They don't want to be in breach. But at that point, the UDRP is just carrying on. I mean, what you do after the UDRP gets commenced as far as updating whois data, as far as, disciplining your client or whatever it is, that's between you and ICANN. It doesn't affect the UDRP unless, of course, the registrar deletes the domain name. Then the UDRP gets affected. But any other action other than deleting the UDRP isn't going to affect the UDRP. So that's from our perspective, and I'll let Alan and Matt talk about their perspectives.
Thank you.
Yeah, I guess all I was going to say is that's why, Michaela, the situation, the kind of scenario you brought up is why I was saying we must add a rule to cover it, because it does put the registrar in a potential conflict, and we need to be explicit about what the registrar can and can't do. So we're making a recommendation which will wend its way into the RAA or the UDRP, which says which takes precedence.
And well, exactly.
I don't know what the right answer is. I can
appreciate that this is the entire thing, Alan. I mean, I think this is part of the cornerstone to why we have this working group, is that while it might be an edge case and it might be a weird scenario, if it happened to us in the morning, I wouldn't have a bloody clue which one I was meant to go with.
Well, exactly. And it's a scenario where there is a possible conflict between the various policies we have, and I think we have an obligation to address the scenario, even if it's an edge case scenario. I can come up with wild ass ways of addressing the problem, but I don't think that's the mode we're in right now. I just think it has to be on our list of things to address.
Thanks, Alan. Marika and then Matt. I'm allowing Marika to go first because she has this wonderful skill at managing to answer loads of questions that we've all been asking.
this is Marika. Not an answer, or not at least not a verified answer with from ICANN staff. But you know, listening to you, I think I agree with Alan that I think there are a couple of options you could consider here. Indeed, either write in the policy that's saying you cannot change, as I think we have written it here, you cannot change it. Even in cases, even maybe referring, even if there's a WHO's accuracy report or there's an exception that you don't need to meet those rules then. But alternatively, you could also write in something saying, unless directed differently by ICANN, which then would allow for that scenario where, indeed, if ICANN staff comes to you with, inaccuracy complaints, you can update it and be in compliance. And as Christine says, the UDRP will proceed in any case. And you also have this requirement under these rules that any new information or updates to contact details need to be communicated to the panel or to the UDRP provider as well. So that information will go in there. Although I guess for the UDRP ruling, I guess it still will be against Mickey Mouse. Or I don't know if the panel at that stage could also decide then to use the real registrant names if the accurate data has been provided. I guess that's another question. So I think there are a couple of options that you could consider dealing with it, but I'm happy as well to take this question back. As to be honest, I don't think there's what trumps what. Presumably that would need to be either written into the policy if there's a clear one overrules the other, which I think currently is not the case as far as I am aware, or just provides this option of saying, well, if I can tell you to do it, in that case, you get a free pass to basically do as ICANN has told you to be in compliance with, whatever policy at that point is deemed more necessary to be followed, depending on the circumstances.
Thanks, Marika. And Matt, sorry for making you wait.
No problem. I wanted to hear what everyone else had to say, too. I'm not sure that the policies are quite as much in conflict as they may appear. The UDRP has a hard obligation on registrars to, it has a hard obligation on the entities that are involved in the UDRP to prevent transfer of domain names to a new holder or a change of registrar. And obviously one of the ways the transfer to a new holder can be affected is by changes to WHOIS information in the registrant-related fields. The obligations under the RAA fall upon the ultimately trickle down to the they require the registrars to have contractual provisions where that gives them the option to enforce against registrants who aren't providing accurate WHOIS data, and they have to do sort of, under the WHOIS accuracy policy, these yearly pings or act upon things that they know are likely to be inaccurate. But it's sort of a totality of the circumstances test, and ICANN's been pretty clear and tried very hard to provide some discretion to the registrars to let them take the action that they think is appropriate in given the situation. I think the hypothetical that Michaela raised, where there may be a registrant who's registered a number of domain names with junk WHOIS data, I don't see a situation where compliance would have any issue with a reminder being sent to the registrant, hey, here are these 230 domain names that you registered that have obviously junk data. Please update them as you can. If 10 of those are subject to UDRP and can't be updated because they're locked, the registrars obviously substantially complied with the notification requirement. Well, they've completely complied with the notification requirement, and they have a really good story as to the reasonableness of the action they've taken, because they're contractually prohibited from taking any action to, say, cancel the domain name for failure to update WHOIS information as to those 10, but they can continue to take whatever action they want as to the other 240 or whatever.
Okay, thank you. Alan, go again.
Yeah.
No.
Oh, no, yeah. No, yeah, yes. I
I think the kind of scenario that was just described may well be how it would play out in reality, but it still puts the registrar in a position where they are on paper at in a conflict and might or might not take a reasonable action from ICANN compliance's point of view. And I don't think we want to leave it up to the compliance officer to make a judgment call at this point. If it's a scenario that does happen in reality or could reasonably happen in reality, I think we need to address it.
It's not just a judgment call. I mean, I think as part of the negotiation of the RAA and subsequent WHOIS data accuracy policies that build off the RAA, the registrars have pushed very hard to maintain this discretion and the ability to take action that they think is reasonable. And what you get with discretion is people questioning your discretion in certain situations. I don't think a situation of not canceling a domain name when you're contractually prohibited under the UDRP from deleting a domain name registration, so long as you've taken reasonable action on all the other ones, can possibly be construed as an abuse of discretion.
Okay. If registrars feel comfortable, I'm certainly not going to press the issue. I just think it's the kind of thing that we should be explicit as to what the process should be followed at that point. But and my hand is down.
Okay, thank you, Alan. There's been some interesting comments here on the chat, which I will read very, very quickly, and hopefully whoever does these transcriptions can make sense of my wonderful Irish accent. From Matt, updating the info of the panel isn't equivalent to updating WHOIS. Christine, the registrant has the responsibility to update their data with the provider. It's not a burden on the registrar. Updating WHOIS from provider's perspective is a non-issue. Once the case is commenced, it's commenced. And the reason we're even discussing this is in relation to privacy and proxy services. Sorry, half my staff are all kind of running around the office now. I don't know what the hell the problem is. I think somebody is on the radio. They're all excited. Okay, then, moving on. Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. If I just may make a suggestion, because I think we're having a lot of really good and interesting discussions, but I think we're getting kind of distracted from the actual draft recommendation. So it may help for the working group, as we're having these discussions, to as well make concrete recommendations or suggestions on how that impacts the straw man. Based on this discussion, do people have certain suggestions that they think should be incorporated, or are these comments actually in support of what is currently there? Because I think that way we might at some point be able to actually get through all these comments and actually hopefully have something that can be supported by everyone in the working group. So maybe that will help facilitate some of these discussions a bit, to actually focus on where is it in the draft recommendations and how would it need to be changed in order to address the comments that are being made or the contributions that are being submitted.
Okay, thanks, Marika. Laurie's just said on the chat there, registrars are not required to delete the name for invalid WHOIS. My reply... Okay, but I think some people think that we are obliged to delete names for invalid WHOIS. Okay, then, moving on. Okay, we have the straw man. We have input and comments from Volker, from Luke, from Marika, from other people. Where to now? Marika.
This is Marika. If I may make a suggestion, maybe it makes sense to continue with the suggestions that Volker and Luke made, because I think they're both closely linked and they follow on from some of the discussions we had on last week's call, because it relates to the question of what to do in the case when there is a proxy or privacy service involved. Is there any kind of window that needs to be provided to notify the service, and are they then in turn allowed to contact the registrant to tell them that this is going to happen and that their data is going to be revealed? So I think Volker initially suggested that there should be a modification made, and I think the language here suggested, after receipt of the provider notification, the domain name is locked. However, within a certain time period, 2 to 3 working days after the lock, a registrar may allow modifications if I can accredit it who is privacy and or proxy providers, provide updated information replacing the registrant record to reflect the actual registrant. And I think this probably just is basically a placeholder, and Volker can correct me if I'm wrong, for if when the accreditation service, accreditation program for proxy and privacy services comes in place. And I think then in response to that, Luke actually suggested that we could also opt for a two-step verification, which would mean within one business day from the first verification request, the registrar would lock the domain against registrar transfer operations, notify the registrant of the complaint and the subsequent lock activation, and remind them that they may lift any applicable proxy privacy service within the next 2 business days, simultaneously notify UDRP provider of the lock. And then within 3 business days, lock the domain name against any operation and provide a UDRP provider with a definitive registrant details, thus allowing the complaint to amend their complaint if need be. And I think that all relates to draft recommendation 3.
Okay. Mass, go ahead.
I just wanted to add one note onto Volker's suggestion, which I think is a good idea to sort of look forward to the different world that we may have if we get accredited privacy proxy services. To be clear, that the only information that the privacy proxy service can substitute is the information that they had on their records at the time they got the verification request from the provider. If we don't specify that, there's a big loophole again where the beneficial owner can go and pick some new name that wasn't currently a record at the time the complaint was filed.
Okay. Christine?
Yeah, I like Volker's suggestion. This is Christine from NAF. I sent an email around just responding to Luke's suggestion, which I think makes logical sense, except the problem with the two-step verification is that it then puts the provider in violation of the UDRP. So if the first verification request the registrar locks, which is great, they notify that, whatever they want to do about the notifying the registrant, lifting the privacy service and locking. But then it's the second part that's the problem. So that giving 3 business days to provide us with definitive registrant details automatically throws us then in violation of the UDRP, which is sort of a status that we're in kind of perpetually here while we're waiting for registrars.
So what's in violation of the UDRP?
We have to do the administrative compliance check within 3 calendar days of receipt of the complaint. The rules say that we have to serve the respondent 3 business days after we receive the complaint and payment, and unless there are deficiencies. So the inference there is that we have those 3 business days or 3 calendar days to find the deficiencies, notify the complainant, and then the complainant has 5 calendar days in which to fix the deficiencies. And so if we're waiting 3 to 4 business days, not calendar days, but business days, for the registrar to come back and get us new contact information, we will be unable to meet our requirement to do the compliance check within 3 days because the UDRP doesn't build in time to wait for the registrar to get back to us. All of that has to happen in the 3 calendar days. So... And I will note that, we're waiting for registrars a large chunk of our time, and so it's already happening that we are not in compliance because we are always waiting for registrars. But I think part of the point of being involved in this is to try to reduce that window so we can be more in compliance in getting those administrative deficiency checks done, on a timely manner. So that would be my point, my comment to Luke's. Otherwise... wonderful two-step suggestion.
Okay. So let's see. Based on the list I have here, I have Alan and then I have Volker.
Yeah, I just a short comment. Based on what Christine said, clearly we have a conflict between the terms, and we either need to reduce some numbers or increase others. If indeed we can't reduce the registrar delays long enough to satisfy the 3-calendar day requirement on the providers, then we need to increase the 3-calendar day. I mean, we need to end up with equations which balance. So I'm not trying to propose which it is, but clearly we need to make one of those adjustments. If we're, otherwise, we're in a situation where we're demanding that people be non-compliant.
Okay, and Volker.
Yes, I was actually not aware of the 3-calendar day requirement that the providers face, not having dug into too deeply into what the providers have to do, and more focusing on what we have to do. That actually is something that we should bear in mind for the next review of the UDOP, perhaps, because I think 3 calendar days already would put a provider into non-compliance with the UDOP in case of a long holiday or a long weekend. So that's something that's problematic, because most registrars don't work on the weekends and public holidays, and would not be able to answer in that time. And then thus putting the provider into non-compliance would be problematic in my view.
Okay, thank you. Alan.
Yeah, Volker said for the next UDRP review, I think that's within our scope. If we find out that the time frames that relate to locking don't add up properly, I think it's within our scope to recommend the changes. I don't see how we can avoid that being within our scope.
Okay. Matt, is that an old hand or a new hand or a... Couple of things in the Marika, I'll come to you just very quickly. A couple of things there in the chat. Registrants have an ongoing obligation to be accurate in who is. If they weren't accurate prior to the filing, who is stuck, but they can update their contact info under Rule 2E for the purposes of the proceeding. Okay, Marika.
Yeah, I just want to confirm, based on the discussions we had now, that there seemed to be support for including the procedure that is described by Volker. If people agree, I can try to write that into draft recommendation 3. Is that, do we get a correct assessment for what was discussed? I think there were some issues with Luke's proposal, but I think both basically tried to do the same thing, if I understand. So. Is that what the working group would like to do, or is another approach they would like to see inserted in the draft recommendation 3?
Anybody?
Well, I wrote the proposal, so I would agree to that, yes.
Thank you, Volker.
Yeah, and this is Rick, of course, noting the modification that Matt suggested, which I think was supported as well by several on the call or in the chat.
Agreed.
Okay. Right. This thing with the calendar days and working days. The UDRP refers to calendar days, so weekends count as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, this is Christine. They do, and then our supplemental rules, we push no deadline under our supplemental rules falls on a calendar day, so it always gets pushed to the next working day. So even if we have to count the 3 days, we always get at least the day that we're back in the office to do everything. So it does effectively give us 1 day in that case. That's the way our supplemental rules are written. And that's why I think that allowing the registrar, I mean, I've been advocating for the 1 business day for the registrar because I think that does work together with the way we currently operate here.
Yeah, so you've been supportive of replacing calendar day with working day. Is that what you're saying?
In the UDRP?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, well, sure, absolutely. Anytime we can replace calendar day with working days, that would be great. But I think that it's not, I don't think there's a conflict. If our recommendation gives the registrar, you know, one business day, however they define it, to respond, I think the way we, at least at NAF, and I don't know what David has to say, but I think at least the way we define the three calendar days, it would still work out. Because we roll it to the next working day. So even if there was a long holiday weekend in there, we still will have that day that we're back in the office to process what we need to process.
Okay. Does anybody have any other thoughts? No? Okay. Right then. So some people like Luke and Volker's proposal with options. There's a couple of issues around it, which has been outlined. There's going to be a couple of minor amendments put in. Right, what next? Let's see. I'm just looking at this here. Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. Do you just want to continue on with the comments on the right-hand side, and then we can come back later to the ones that are still in the document from Luke?
Yeah, that's probably easiest. Thanks for directing me back to the one true path. You can walk. Do you want to walk us through your own comments, Marika?
Yes, and this is Rick, and just to clarify, these are not necessarily my own comments. These are comments I've gathered from feedback I received from colleagues in the legal department as well as compliance. And I think some of these may have already been addressed by some of the discussions we've had, but you know, I think we just cover them and see if we have already spoken about them or addressed issues. I think, for example, on the first one, I think that's also something that was pointed out by Matt in his email. So the first one is draft recommendation 2 and 3. The UDRP sets forth exceptions that allow for changes of registrar and registrant during a pending UDRP proceeding, see paragraph 8A and B. As such, registrar should not be instructed to prevent any changes of registrar and registrant during a pending UDRP proceeding. And maybe that is something just to note down, that there may be exceptions based on, maybe it's just a clarification that can be added here, saying, you know, exceptions provided under rules, paragraph 8A and B, or something like that. I don't know if that's a...
So in other words, clarification.
Right, clarifying that there may be exceptions based on paragraph 8A and B, in which case changes can be made.
Okay. Continue.
Okay, another comment. Then the next one, draft recommendation number 3, is the registrar allowed before initiating the lock to process a change of registrant to transfer the rights to the domain from a proxy service to the licensee of the proxy service? And I think that's something we already extensively discussed and have now, I think, Volker's proposal on the table. I'm not sure if we need to discuss this further.
Anybody have any input here? Speak up or forever hold your peace. Matt says he thinks Volkers does the trick. And Luke has a new business development idea. Okay, which... right, moving on, next...
Yeah, this is Marika. Draft recommendation number 3, and I think that's something we haven't exactly discussed, but I think there have been some comments on the list about that. Basically, draft recommendation 3, the suggestion is that the working group should try to be specific about which changes should, must, may be allowed, and which should, must, may not be allowed. I think we've spoken clearly about, you know, that there should be no changes to registrant and registrar. But we've also, I think, spoken in the past whether there should be any clarification that, you know, a registrar must allow changes to the name servers, and whether indeed there are other elements that we need to be really clear about what can or can't be do and be very specific. So I think that's a question where I think we still need to be provide further details. And I think that's the part that's basically highlighted. Where am I wrong now? Oh, no, sorry. I think it's somewhere else.
Okay. Next, please.
It would be good if we can have some discussion on that or some clarification, because that's still, because basically that's basically the part highlighted in yellow, in the bright yellow, in draft recommendation 3, because basically it says the following changes should not be prevented. I think we talk about what should be prevented, or maybe we should basically make this must. But is there anything we need to put in here, or do we just leave that up to the discretion of the registrar? So it would be helpful to get some guidance here so we can actually write something up that people can review.
Okay. Matt has his hand up. Go ahead, Matt.
Hey, sorry for the toddler noise in the background here. But I think since the transfer prohibition is the only thing that is derived from the UDRP itself, I think anything beyond that is optional and is a matter of contract between the registrar and their customers. Whether they're going to prohibit anything else, make any additional requirements about elements of who is or other background information that can or can't be changed. I think that's just up to the contractees.
Okay. Alan.
Yeah, I don't question that the contract can or should be specific, but I think we're giving guidance to the registrars for what they can put in the contract. And I made a suggestion, but I don't remember exactly, but I think it was that maybe one of the outputs of what we do is a list of who is elements with yes, no, or under what conditions can you change, or under what conditions or time frame can you change. And if we follow that through, then we're going to list all elements. And I think that would really be useful and provide clarity to registrars who don't do this very often. I mean, saying you can't transfer the domain to a different person, but you can reveal privacy, you know, is almost a conflict in itself. So I think we really need to be specific on this. Some of it may be not redundant, but may not be necessary to meet the UDRP, but I think we should provide good guidance to the registrars as the output of what we're doing.
Okay, I'm just putting my registrar hat on again. Strongly agreeing with Alan, not feeling dirty about it. from my perspective as a registrar, the current UDRP policy and everything around it is far too vague and ambiguous. And it's not at all clear to me which, apart from don't allow the domain to be transferred, which elements should or should not be frozen. And we've had a number of disputes around domains, not necessarily involving UDRP, where, you know, we've handed some bits off to our legal counsel, and he's a lawyer. He knows how to turn on a computer, and he does do email, and I've even had him submit a comment to an ICANN public forum. But, you know, he looks at the wording of something, and he's trying his best to interpret it, and he needs to be told categorically, yes, this is allowed, no, this is not allowed. With respect to the who is data elements, which ones can or cannot, or should or should not, or must or must not, or whatever, be modified at various stages in a UDRP, that makes a lot of sense to me. That seems incredibly logical, and it's something I can give to a geek and say, make this happen, and they will have a nice template, and they will make it happen. Thanks. Marika, go ahead.
It isn't Marika. I think Alan made such a good suggestion. Would he maybe be willing to volunteer to make a first draft of such an overview? I'm happy to work with Alan on that, of course. But
Since we're skipping next week's meeting, yes.
And Alan, if you need help with regards to the elements and who is or whatever, you know, ping me an email. I can do emails.
I'll put something arbitrary. If it's wrong, people can critique it. But
don't worry, I'll take pleasure in doing that.
That will be an interesting example of is all of this clear enough that I can even figure out what the elements are that we need to talk about? By the way, I was going to put a comment in the chat, but I'll say it since I'm speaking. Michele, I think we need to be clear enough that you don't have to consult your lawyer.
Well, that would be ideal, Alan. That would be ideal. And I mean, jokes aside, we are not GoDaddy. No offense to GoDaddy, but they have an entire legal team.
Yeah.
A lot of the smaller registrars either don't have a legal team, or the legal team is one person who is trying to juggle a million and one things for the registrar. And I'm sure Volker and Luke could speak to that. You know, they probably have to deal with just about every single legal issue that has anything to do with the company in many cases. I mean, how many lawyers do you have in Key Systems, Volker?
Well, there's me.
And
there's somebody who handles a bit of abuse, but that's it.
Yeah, but Michele, there's going to be plenty of things in contracts which require interpretation. A list of who is fields should not be one of them.
Well, that's exactly my point. And what I'm trying to get at is that, as you say, you shouldn't have to call on your lawyer for something like this. You shouldn't have to make an interpretation. It should be, this is a list which I can follow. I'm a strong believer in checklists. Now, that doesn't mean I want ICANN or anybody else to tell me everything that I have to do. But for certain things like this, telling me what I explicitly, giving me explicit instructions on certain things that I can then follow, makes it nice and easy. I mean, it's not as if we actually make any bloody money from processing UDRPs. You know, it costs us money, if anything. Right, it's 3 minutes to the top of the hour. One of the other items there that there's a couple of other items there around definitions and clarification again. Draft recommendation 4, working group may want to clarify that confirm means to the UDRP provider. And another one there around verification. Again, just more clarification as to exactly what is required. Now, we don't have time really to discuss this now. So, you know, those of you who work for the providers, if you have, you know, the fact that you may have documentation hidden somewhere on your websites, it would be helpful if we could have some of this information front and center so we can try and get it somewhere where we can all see it, you know, kind of nice and clearly, and we don't have to go looking. We will not be meeting next week. Several of you will be in Amsterdam. If you are in Amsterdam, I look forward to seeing you all. If you're not in Amsterdam, well, then I won't see you. Have a pleasant week and speak to you all in 2 weeks' time. Thank you.
Bye, all. Thank you, Michele.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.